Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech Foreign Ministry has issued a fresh appeal for Czechs to leave Ukraine. The office of the president is being inspected after reported shredding of classified documents, and a long-awaited new art space, Kunsthalle Praha, is to open in the historic city centre on Tuesday. The Czech Foreign Ministry has issued another appeal for Czechs in Ukraine to consider leaving the country without delay. In an updated travel warning issued following a meeting of the National Security Council on Sunday evening, the ministry urges Czechs in Ukraine to leave the country as quickly as possible, particularly if they're planning to take a flight out, since international airlines are fast terminating links to Kyiv. Those who cannot leave are being advised to exercise extreme caution, prepare an emergency evacuation plan, and monitor credible media. Any Czechs in the country have been advised to register with the ministry's information system, Drost. The National Security Authority has begun an inspection of the office of the president in connection with its handling of classified information. At the start of February, the Lower House's Security Committee recommended that the authority and the Ministry of Interior carry out such checks following reports that the office of the president had shredded a classified report on Russian secret services involvement in explosions at a Czech munitions depot in 2014. The National Security Authority inspection is expected to last 2 to 3 weeks. Some 4,267 new cases of COVID-19 were recorded in the Czech Republic on Sunday, the lowest one-day tally in 6 weeks. There were also 673 reinfections, with both figures down markedly on the previous Sunday. Testing numbers were also a lot lower. The 7-day case incidence on Sunday was 995 per 100,000 inhabitants. There were 3,127 people in hospital with the coronavirus. The Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Jan Lipavský, will meet for talks with his Australian counterpart, Maurice Payne, on Wednesday. The Czech Foreign Minister reported on its webpage it is the first visit to Prague by an Australian foreign minister in 17 years. According to the ministry's statement, the meeting confirms Czech interests in the Indo-Pacific region, which is one of the priority areas of the forthcoming Czech presidency of the Council of Europe. Australia is a key partner for the Czech Republic in this region, with which we want to intensify dialogue, the statement says. The ministers will discuss means of stepping up multilateral cooperation, especially closer cooperation in the field of cybersecurity. Kunsthalle Praha, a new non-profit cultural space located in the historical city centre, is due to open to the public on February 22nd with an exhibition called 100 Years of Electricity in Art. Located in the converted building of a former electricity transformer station, the gallery is the brainchild of art collector Petr Pudil and his wife Pavlina. Its mission is to create an international platform for art and culture, a venue for art exhibitions and educational projects, with a focus on 20th and 21st century Czech art. And singer Eva Farna has won 4 nominations for the Anděl Music Awards, more than any other singer or band. Members of the Czech Academy of Music nominated her for the album Umami in the categories Best Album, Best Singer, Best Song and Best Video Clip. Singer Vladimír Mišík received 3 nominations for his CD Noční obraz, as did the late David Stipka, whose album Dýchej was completed after the singer's death by his bandmates from Banjis. The nominations were announced in Prague on Monday. The Anděl Music Awards, the Czech equivalent of a Grammy, will be handed out at a gala ceremony on April the 27th. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be partly cloudy to overcast with rain or snow showers and day temperatures between 3 and 7 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Still to come in the program, we look at mounting fears of a Russian invasion into Ukraine and the opening of a new art space in Prague's historic city centre, Kunsthalle Praha, on Tuesday. Later on, the Moravian-born Canadian linguist Julie Shegyevi discusses losing her first language, Czech, and her efforts to get it back again. Stay with us. In an interview for Czech television, Czech Prime Minister Petr Fiala said he still believes a peaceful solution can be found to the Russian build-up on the Ukrainian border. However, he also warned that the likelihood of a Russian invasion has increased and it could happen at any moment. In the face of this threat, the Prime Minister praised EU and NATO unity in confronting the situation. Tom McEncrow has the story.
Mr. Fiala said that the situation was getting increasingly serious by the day and that Europe could be a step away from war. Attempts at reaching a diplomatic solution with Russia have not borne fruit as of yet, Mr. Fiala said, adding that despite this he still believes one can be found. Nevertheless, the West needs to be ready to accept the possibility that a solution will not be reached at the negotiating table. His words were similar to those of other European leaders, such as Boris Johnson, following the Munich Security Conference, which took place last weekend. Western unity is key in persuading Russia not to commit an act of aggression, the Czech Prime Minister said, adding that if she were to do so, she must be confronted with serious sanctions. He also mentioned that he is impressed by the unity of all EU member states in finding a common approach to the situation.
The whole EU is united in this, and that's what's new. We know that in our recent history, the past decade, our positions may have differed slightly. For example, due to different economic interests or historic ones, we have a negative experience. Then there are the Baltic states, which are directly exposed to risk. These stances were varied. France and Germany sometimes had moments when they were very careful and more open to negotiating with Russia and enforcing lighter sanctions. Today, our stance is completely united, and I don't think that President Putin counted on that.
Mr. Fiala said that a wide array of sanctions is prepared if Russia were to attack. These vary in their severity based on the type of action that Russia may choose to conduct. Sanctions are, for example, different if a mass cyber attack took place rather than a military invasion. However, none of them are cosmetic and would have an impact on Russia. He also stated that there is readiness within the EU to support those states who would be more impacted within the Union. On Sunday, Minister of Foreign Affairs Jan Lipavsky said that the Czech Republic will be sending further medical aid to Ukraine worth 10 million crowns. According to the Prime Minister, this could rise to 100 million crowns if the situation were to get worse.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Moving on now to cultural matters. Prague's art scene has got a notable new player with the opening of the privately owned museum Kunsthalle Praha. The venue's first major exhibition reflects the building's history as an electricity transformer station. Ian Willoughby has the story.
Machines buzz, lights flicker, and films are projected at Kinetismus, 100 years of electricity in art. It's the first major exhibition at Kunsthalle Praha, and brings together a dazzling selection of over 90 works. The show's focus on electricity reflects the history of the building, which was originally known as the Zenger Transformer Station. A second exhibition at Kunsthalle looks at the story of the venue itself, which is located at Klarov, the area opposite Malostranska metro station. Art historian Vendula Hnitkova is its curator.
This building was constructed in the 1930s, but originally there was intention to build an alternative project which was on the opposite side of the street, but because it's located in the heart of the historical sites, there wasn't a common agreement about the location and about the design. So the investor, the Electrical Works of Capital Prague, were forced to find an alternative plot to build an alternative project. And this is the output of a long-term disputes about the proper design.
Now, after a major transformation taking half a decade, the building has been turned into a spacious modern gallery and venue, including terraces with stunning views. Kunsthalle Praha is the brainchild of businessman Petr Podíl, who made billions in the coal industry, and his wife Pavlina. The couple are known as committed art collectors. Kunsthalle Praha chief curator Kristel Havranek explains the concept of the new venue.
Kunsthalle, as you know from the name, it's a format of art institution which shows short-time exhibitions and focused on the local scene, but giving an international context. And also we would like to help the local scene or the local artists to produce works and to exhibit new projects rather than existing works that they have already done in the past.
Given the no doubt astronomical cost of the project, I asked Havranek how Kunsthalle intended to generate income.
Mostly income from admissions and also from memberships. It's a model, I think it's quite known in England or in the US, this membership system.
Meanwhile, Vendula Hnitková says Kunsthalle Praha should prove a real shot in the arm for the Klárov district.
I think that the basic idea is something groundbreaking in terms of the locality, since the Prague inhabitants and Prague dwellers perceive this part of Prague as a tourist ghetto where we actually don't go to because there is no purpose to come here. And I think that the cultural institution may shift this perspective of perception of Klárov as a neglected area into something where we might have a reason to go to, so I very welcome it.
Kunsthalle Praha opens to the public on Tuesday. Kinetismus, 100 years of electricity in art, runs until the 22nd of May.
Ian Willoughby with that report. And if you're listening to us in Prague, then do check out that new exhibition space, Kunsthalle Praha. A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Now, everybody knows that Czech is a difficult language for foreigners to master. But what is it like trying to relearn the language if you have lost it as a child? That is something Ian Willoughby discusses with linguist Julie Sedivi in this edition of One on One.
In the recently published Memory Speaks, the linguist Julie Sedivi explores the deep connections between language, memory, identity and migration. As well as drawing on the science, the book is also something of a memoir. Sedivi's own family left Czechoslovakia when she was only two, and when they settled in Canada, she gradually lost most of her Czech. However, as a heritage language learner, she has managed to reconnect with her mother tongue in recent years. She spoke to me last week from her home in Calgary.
My father was, I guess, what you would call a forest caretaker or a forest ranger. We lived in a small house at the edge of a national forest, I guess, or a state forest. And we left in 1969, so after the invasion. And that departure was motivated, as for a number of Czechs who went abroad at that time, by the political circumstances of the time. My father had been deemed unfit for university because of political affiliations and religious affiliations. So they were looking for the possibility of educating their children was a very strong motivation for them. My father and mother both had been denied the opportunity to be educated at higher levels. And they wanted that opportunity for their kids, and they wanted to live with greater freedoms as well.
Well, naturally, initially, you spoke Czech together. How did Czech come to gradually become the kind of secondary language in your household after you settled in Montreal in Canada?
Really, the transition came at school. I think that's such a big boundary for many immigrant children. You grow up speaking the family language at home, but then all of a sudden, when much of your life takes place outside of the home, you very quickly realize that the world out there doesn't speak Czech. We did not have access to a large Czech-speaking community. Every now and then we might encounter a Czech speaker outside of our family, but it was very rare. And children pick up on these messages very quickly. They're very good at learning, out here in the world, these are the languages that are spoken. For me at that time, because we moved to Montreal, it was French and then English when we started school. So as we started speaking school at English and realized that there was really not much reward for speaking Czech, and in fact that other children might look at us a little bit strangely if we were heard speaking amongst ourselves in the schoolyard in Czech, we began to avoid speaking Czech in public and then brought that language home. So I recall that by the time my younger sister was born, 5 years younger than me, at that point I was in kindergarten, I guess, we were beginning to speak to our younger siblings in English at home.
In Memory Speaks, you say that the depth of loss of a first language is connected to age of immigration. You have a number of siblings. How did their experience of language in childhood compare to yours?
This is absolutely true. So the younger you are when you move from one language to another, the more likely you are to lose whatever language you had, which was certainly the case for all of us to some extent. And for the most part, we've seen that progression. We were six children. My oldest brother has retained an impressive degree of Czech. It easily gets activated when we make a trip back. And I think his grammar is quite solid. As we move down the ranks into the younger siblings, they're much less proficient, with the exception of my very youngest brother, who actually now divides his time between the Czech Republic and the United States. And his Czech to my ear is absolutely perfect. So he's been able to, I think, relearn it at a very high level of proficiency.
One thing you write in the book that's quite amusing is that you were at a loss in the schoolyard when you were asked for Czech swear words because you weren't hearing them at home.
Yeah, and this is something that happens, I think, to immigrant children, is that the contexts in which they hear their language spoken are very limited. So whatever you don't hear in your family, you don't necessarily learn as part of the language. In our case, my parents simply did not swear in Czech. And so when we were asked by our school friends to provide some examples of swear words, we couldn't do it, which is very embarrassing as a child when you claim to speak a particular language and you can't produce a swear word in that language. Other children quickly lose interest in you.
But you said your sister improvised.
My sister, who is very inventive, decided to tell the other kids that the filthiest word you could produce in Czech was the word zmrzlina, which satisfied them.
Which is, of course, ice cream. That is a really very funny story. One striking point in the book is when you say that parents often move country, go abroad or emigrate for the sake of their children, but in doing so, in a sense, they lose their children or they lose a certain connection to their children. Could you elaborate on that?
One of the, I guess, tragedies of language learning is that for biological reasons that we don't fully understand, it's not generally possible to learn a second language to full native-like proficiency if you begin learning it in adulthood. And on the other hand, as we've mentioned, children who move into a new linguistic environment are particularly vulnerable to losing their first language. So you have this collision of biological predispositions within immigrant families who arrive with young children. And what this typically means is that the children don't have the ability to remain fully proficient in their parents' language throughout their lives, often even as early as middle childhood and adolescence, during those critical years when communication between parents and children is difficult under any circumstances, and when there's a language barrier, that becomes all the more so.
And was it a source of sadness to your parents?
I think it certainly was. I remember feeling, particularly on my father's side, that sense of distance and sadness. My mother was able to learn English to a somewhat higher degree of proficiency than he did throughout his life. I was aware of that sadness and that feeling that he had continually, that we were drifting away from him, drifting away from the culture that he felt very attached to. So yeah, this was, I think, something that dominated our childhood and adolescence.
I know some bilingual people who really aren't perfect in any language. So I guess there really are, can be disadvantages to being bilingual.
Yes, absolutely. Depending on your pattern of when you acquired which language at which time and where you moved around in your life. I know a number of people like this as well. And they're faced with, you know, the challenge that they don't have a single language that they feel as much at ease in as many people who command a language thoroughly.
I knew somebody who was trilingual, who spoke Czech, German, and an African language. And this person told me they didn't like the version of themselves when they spoke Czech, because Czech had so many diminutives and so on. A lot of times in Czech, if you want to ask for something, you have to do it in a roundabout way. And the person didn't like that iteration of themselves.
This is such a common thing among multilingual and multicultural people, is this feeling that they have different versions of themselves in different languages. And of course, that, I think, reflects the fact that those languages have been learned in different cultural contexts. There are different social expectations of you in each of those languages and cultures. And you might feel like there's a better fit with one or the other. I myself feel that way as well. I speak English, French, and Czech. And I do feel that different aspects of my personality come out in those different languages. In Czech, I feel I have permission to be more blunt than I do in English, particularly when I'm speaking with people who are closer to me. English Canadians have a reputation for requiring a certain degree of politeness, and I think that that stereotype is very true. And in French, I feel just a little bit more free, more carefree, and that's my fun language, the language in which I just relax and enjoy myself.
Tell us about your first visit to the Czech Republic as an adult from the perspective of language.
My very first visit was in 1994. I was there as a young student, a young graduate student. That was my first experience of being immersed in a Czech-speaking environment where everything occurred in Czech. And I recall pulling into the train station in Prague and hearing over the loudspeaker the announcements about where trains would be leaving from which platforms and so on. That just struck me as such a strange thing to hear. I had never heard Czech spoken in a public place like that before. So to me, it really felt like one of my brothers or uncles had run up to the microphone and grabbed as a prank and begun speaking our little family language as a joke. And it was really a profound experience to just feel the reality of there being an entire nation who spoke this particular language that to me had been a very small, intimate language.
Tell us about your own efforts to improve your Czech later in life.
The real turning point for me was a trip I took in 2015, I believe, when I was able to travel to the Czech Republic by myself, so without reinforcements of people who could easily translate for me, and spent some sustained period of time in my father's village of Moravská Nová Ves, where very few people spoke English, including most of my family members. So I was really thrown into that environment. And I had the experience of the language simply bubbling up in my mind. I would begin to dream in Czech, and words that I hadn't used in decades would suddenly come to mind in unexpected ways. That did real wonders for my confidence and my ability to speak Czech. And since then, I've tried to retain it as much as I can. I read as much as I can in Czech. I stream programs and podcasts in Czech as a way of at least retaining my comprehension. But I really feel the effects of not having Czech speakers around with whom I can produce the language. So it is very high time for me to make another trip back.
You make an interesting point in the book also that many Czechs see others or foreigners as either perfect speakers of Czech or non-speakers of Czech.
Yeah, I think it's still the case that relatively few people learn Czech as adults. And you really have to have a very specific reason for learning Czech. And as a result, I think many Czech speakers aren't used to encountering adult learners of Czech the way that English learner speakers, for example, are. We are used to hearing all kinds of different accents and to glossing over some of the grammatical errors and oddities that people make. But I think that's less the case in Czech. So, you know, I felt that there was not always a full comprehension of what it's like to be an adult learner or to be a heritage language learner of Czech. And I would encounter, for example, comments that when I made a grammatical error, someone might say, well, I told you how to say this last week. How can you not remember? And for those of us, of course, who have tried to learn a foreign language, we know that it takes a massive number of repetitions before you finally master a certain grammatical structure. For me as a heritage language learner, I think it has a lot of emotional impact because on the one hand, you feel that this is your language This is the language you heard as a child that your mother spoke to you. You feel a very strong emotional connection to it, a sense of ownership. But then you're also very aware of your outsider status, that you don't master it proficiently, that people look at you and sometimes, at times, laugh at you for your lack of command of the language. So it's a very conflicted feeling for me.
Julie, what are your favorite things about the Czech language?
So many things. I really appreciate the orientation that many Czechs have to their language as a thing of beauty. I think many Czechs really value linguistic skills, value the ability to tell a good story, a descriptive story. I love its expressiveness, the way that you can add prefixes to verbs to bring out nuances of meaning that you can't in English. For example, in Czech, you can capture the difference between reading. You would use the word číst. But if you wanted to capture the way that you are fully absorbed in reading, you would say se začíst. That would be like to immerse yourself in reading. So Czech grammar has the capacity to add these kinds of nuances to verbs that I think are really, really lovely and very powerful. There's so much to love about the Czech. The sounds of it, the way the consonants just jumble together in, you know, great configurations. I'm clearly very attached to this language.
And that edition of One on One with linguist Julie Sedivi has brought us to the end of today's program from Prague. You'll find us at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. And remember, you can follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter as well. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.